South Asia is a world in itself, a medley of languages, nations, and religions, home to one-sixth of humanity. This week and next, NPR correspondents are traveling across the subcontinent, east to west, along the Grand Trunk Road, getting to know the next generation in this critical region. NPR's Philip Reeves is in India's capital, New Delhi.
It's happy hour on the Grand Trunk Road. There are not many places on our journey where you'd see a scene like this. Affluent young Indian women are drinking with men in an American-style bar. It's packed. Happy hour in this bar lasts 6 hours. The liquor's flowing fast. New Delhi used to be a dreary government town that did most of its partying in private. Not anymore, says Niti Khurana, a teacher.
Delhi has changed a lot. You know, if you see the social surrounding also, it has changed.
And do you as a young woman feel safe coming out?
No, not at all. At night, you cannot be safe in Delhi, sorry. That's a very honest reply.
And what about money? It's expensive. Alcohol costs a lot.
Not really. We spend a lot, so not for us and not for people like all of them. They are all spending money. It's supposed to be happy hour, so they are spending money.
Let me ask you, what's your name, please, ma'am?
Shruti.
And your other name?
No.
Just Shruti. And what do you do?
I'm a housewife.
Is there any taboo attached if you say to your husband or to your parents, look, I'm going to a bar?
I would say yes, because some of the families come from a very rigid background. So yes, unless you have a guy around you. Yes, it is a little unsafe.
You wouldn't walk into a place like this alone?
I wouldn't. I have my limitations.
See, it has changed. See, everything has become very liberal and everything, because you're just drinking to enjoy.
Travelling the same route as the ancient Grand Trunk Road has taken us through some of India's poorest parts. Here in the capital, the country's wealth is on display. There are new cars, shopping malls, and gated communities for the rich and their servants. The multitude of poor live as they always have, in slums or on the streets. We get back on the road and head north along the new wide National Highway 1 and glide into the state of Punjab. India's affluence is evident here too, amid the ramshackle towns and the flat fields dotted with brick factories. We pass half-built high-rise luxury apartments, garish new villas, a drive-in McDonald's, signs offering limos for hire. Even the dhabas, the roadside cafes, are large and clean. Gurmit Singh doesn't much like this consumer society that's evolving in India. He thinks it's undermining his religion.
Young people are very much interested in earning lots of money and having the right kind of car and having all the consumer durables that you need. I think this is definitely one of the reasons why interest in faith and, you know, belief in faith is going down, especially in this part of the country.
We've reached the border city of Amritsar, home of the Golden Temple, the spiritual centre of Gurmit's faith. He's a Sikh. He's sitting under some arches on the white marble floor of the temple compound. Hundreds of tourists and pilgrims mill around, watched by Sikh guards with bright turbans, long beards, and silver-tipped spears. This dazzling shrine attracts more visitors than the Taj Mahal. Gurmit's 25 and single. He has a well-paid job training farmers to use pesticides. It's not what he wants. He yearns to teach.
I trained to become a teacher, but I could not get a job in that. And for every job out here, there's a going rate that you have to bribe someone with.
This is a complaint we've heard again and again on our journey. Young Indians deeply resent India's endemic corruption. Gurmit says the going rate for the teaching post is $6,000.
I didn't have that kind of money to bribe people.
He hasn't given up.
It's possible that in the next couple of years I'll be able to save enough money to become a teacher. And then maybe I'll bribe the government and become a teacher. Maybe.
Not far from the Golden Temple, there's a shrine of a different kind. It marks the spot where troops, under the command of a British general, opened fire on a crowd of unarmed Indians. Historians still argue over the death toll. Estimates vary from 380 to several thousand. That massacre contributed greatly to the chain of events that eventually led to the end of British colonial rule and the bloody partition of the subcontinent. Niraj Tahiliani and his wife Bhavna have come to pay their respects to the massacre victims. He's a federal government accountant. She works in a state bank. Unlike a lot of young Indians, their jobs are secure.
Job surety is there.
For you, that must be a good feeling.
Yes, definitely.
Security,
it is a very secure job. It's a good feeling because unless you don't do anything wrong, you know you have a job for life.
They've just got married. We've heard on our journey from young Indians challenging India's tradition of arranged marriage. For these two, it seems to have worked.
It's an arranged marriage, but
we fall in love.
This happy couple seems to have everything. I ask about what they want for their children. Will they push them to do even better? By winning a place, perhaps, at one of India's elite schools.
We don't think like that. We're more inclined to look at our children and see what they're inclined to do, to see where their interests lie, and we'll support them in doing that.
We're approaching now the border between India and Pakistan, the one great obstacle in this road. It's significant, I think, that the road that leads to this border on the Indian side has been dramatically improved in the last few years, which suggests that in the long term there is optimism that these two countries can start to have a more normal relationship and that this ancient trade route can fully come back to life and become what it was when armies and pilgrims and scholars and clerics and above all traders were moving back and forth along it.
This is one of the world's strangest borders. Every night a crowd gathers on both sides to cheer on their country as the gates are ceremoniously closed. It's late afternoon. Indians are beginning to arrive. Waiting for them, with a fistful of DVDs showing the same ceremony, is a bright-eyed boy.
My name is Manpreet Singh.
How old are you, Manpreet?
I'm 12 years old.
Manpreet is the son of a rickshaw driver. He says he sells DVDs to pay for his school uniform. Our conversation turns to Pakistan, just a few hundred yards away. So many in India regard Pakistan as the enemy, and vice versa. Three wars have left a legacy of deep suspicion, for some even hatred, now reinforced daily by tabloid TV news shows.
I don't think ill of them. In fact, the best thing that would ever happen is if we became one country again.
If that happened, you wouldn't be able to make any money out of your CDs.
No problem, sir.
He flashes us a broad grin, a grin that seems to symbolise the hope and spirit and optimism of the young Indians we've met along this road. Philip Reeves, NPR News.